A few weeks ago, Seattle police arrested a young University of Washington student for something that he said online. He'd posted comments about Elliot Roger, the man behind this spring's fatal shootings at the University of California, Santa Barbara. The UW student wrote, and I quote, "I am the next Elliot Roger, and guess what? I'll do the right thing this time," end quote. The internet is a place where people say a lot of crazy things. Some of them are true, some a lot of hot air. At what point can your online comments land you in handcuffs? These are the sorts of questions that keep Andy Sellers busy. He's the assistant director of Harvard University's Digital Media Law Project. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Marcy. How are you?
I'm good. What was it exactly, do you think, about the University of Washington student's comments that did land him in jail?
Well, it's the nature of the comments themselves, I think, were somewhat reasonably interpreted to be a threat in this case. And so when you talk about ways you can get in trouble for speaking online, we can talk about the content of what you say. You can also get in trouble because of what you say could reveal something about what you did. In this case, it seems to be related to what he said and possibly what he might have done but for this intervention. The question of when you can and cannot punish a threat online is a very hot issue right now. And in fact, the Supreme Court is going to hear next term a case called Alanis versus United States that might add some clarity to this area of law. And the big question in Alanis is whether or not the speaker has to intend to intimidate or intend to strike fear or coerce in order to be punished under the federal threats statute, the same statute that Keshav Vaidya is punished under.
So it's that intent that would be the line between hyperbole and a potentially criminal offense?
Well, intent is the piece that is in some courts' interpretations of it and not in others. Most courts adopt what's called a reasonable listener test, or sometimes flipped around what a reasonable speaker should have foreseen. Either way, you're bringing an objective test in. You're saying, what would a person perceiving this information understand? Is this person making a threat that it would appear to be genuine, true, that they are actually going to carry out, versus political invective, hyperbole, caustic, and sometimes offensive language that nonetheless we protect, and for very good reason.
I'm speaking with internet law expert Andy Sellers. So if the student had voiced his comments aloud to somebody rather than posting them in written form online, would the police have had cause to arrest him?
They may have had cause to arrest him, but it's an interesting question as to whether or not they ever would have been apprised of the situation. Context can be so important when evaluating whether or not a threat is true or not true. And the hard thing about publishing online is that context can sometimes slip away. So something that might be fine type of language for one particular online community, if it leaves that community, could be interpreted very differently, because when you leave that community, you're no longer accustomed to how that community speaks. The community could adopt a very violent or dangerous type of rhetoric as just part of their behavior online. Now, it's worth noting that in the particular case here, it seems like this comment was shocking even within the community that the comment was made. This was most of the comments were made in response to a YouTube video about Elliot Roger. And right away, people started responding in a very shocked way. And in fact, I believe it was the person who posted the original video that later contacted the UW police, which led to the investigation and subsequent arrest.
I would also assume that there's something about the reach of online as opposed to face-to-face or face-to-group oral presentation of comments?
Sure, and an important part of the audience you might reach to is not only just sheer magnitude of numbers, but also whether or not the speech actually reaches the targets of your threat. Earlier cases by the Supreme Court and other courts seem to put a lot of weight on the fact on whether or not the person who was the target of the threat could actually ever be put in a position to hear what was said. So the most famous case in the Supreme Court in this is a case called United States versus Watts, and this is from the mid-1960s at the height of the Vietnam tensions, and a protester on the National Mall said, I've gotten my draft classification and I'm not going. If they give me a gun, the first person I want in my sights is LBJ, President Johnson. And he was arrested, and his conviction was later overturned by the Supreme Court for making a threat to the president. And it seemed quite relevant to the Supreme Court, both that we expect political figures to be capable of withstanding a lot of very caustic scrutiny, and also the fact that it was highly unlikely the president was ever going to receive this threat.
Interesting. So there is some sort of difference then drawn legally between spoken language, intent, online written comments, which were not, didn't even exist at that point in time. But what does all of this tell us about the nature of internet and free speech?
There's a lot of temptation to say that we are more nasty online than we were offline, that we are somehow less inhibited by what we say online. And while that feels anecdotally correct in a lot of cases, I'm not aware of any studies that have really delved into that in details. In some ways, I think it may be that we're seeing a lot more of each other's speech than we did before. A classic example of this, we talked about the U.S. versus Belgium game I was hearing just as I was waiting to get on. If, heaven forbid, the ref makes a bad call during the game, I would expect to see a lot of very nasty things said about that ref on Twitter. And those very same nasty things would be said at bars across the United States. The difference is on Twitter, it's very easy to start searching for the ref's name and find every instance where something very nasty was said, and then present them as a package and say, wow, look how bad we are. Look how awful we are as a people because we say all these nasty things. When in reality, we're getting a very skewed picture here because we knew where to find it and we could aggregate it so easily, we forget the magnitude question comes back into play.
Andy Sellers is Assistant Director of Harvard's Digital Media Law Project. Thanks so much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Marcy.
You're listening to The Record from KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman.